الرحمن الرحيم الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين بارئ الخلائق أجمعين باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيد الأنام سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening and the return of our Imam, please recite the salawat. For his health and well-being, recite the second one louder. Insha'Allah, each and every one of us becomes a true and close companion of our beloved Imam. Recite the third one even louder. As per the request, we've been mentioning about a 10, maximum 15 minute reminder that gives us a little bit of spirituality, inshallah, or teaching that's related to that. And we said that we're going to be mentioning that from a book called Al-Muraqibat by Mirza Javad Aghai Maliki Tabrizi, one of the Urafa in the recent times, who was buried in Qum after having studied in Najaf. After having studied or been under the guidance, the spiritual guidance of his teacher, Mullah Hussein Quliya Hamadani in Najaf, he moved over to Qum and he's buried there. If you go to Qum, inshallah, visit his grave. One of the points that he mentions, he doesn't mention this as a spiritual advice, but in the section he discusses on Muharram, he mentions something that reminds me of an important teaching that is given. I think all of us need this. What is it? It's related to Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. I want to take a lesson from Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, a spiritual lesson, a very important one. When you look at Abu Abdullah in Karbala, the atrocities he faced, the difficulties he faced are very, very serious. I think for the most part, we really don't understand, we don't feel what that means. Even when the masa'ib are said to us, when we hear the masa'ib, even when we cry, we really don't get the real gist of what Abu Abdullah salamullah alayhi faced. Let me try to, I'll try my best. I know I'm going to be deficient, but I'm going to try my best. I'm up here sitting and speaking to you all. Right? I'm telling you things. I'm talking to you. You all are respecting me. There's almost pin drop silence. When I'm speaking, you don't interrupt. Even if you disagree, you don't interrupt. Afterwards, you come forward, you give your salams, thank you, this, that, the other. If you have a question. If I were to come in this room, and if I wanted to give you a talk, but then as soon as I say Bismillah Rahman Rahim, you start making noise. Alright? And instead of coming here to listen to my talk, as I have come to present what I have for you, that I think is beneficial for you, instead of me coming here and trying to present something to you that is beneficial to you, but instead of you guys coming and listening to me, you come in with the intention that we are going to disturb this session, we're going to disrupt it, and we're going to try to take an opportunity to kill this guy. if I were to come in here and I would face this small gathering, relatively small, inshallah it's big and it's accepted by Abu Abdullah. But what's the number? 1,000 maximum brothers and sisters put together. 1,500, 2,000, it's no more than that, right? If I were coming here to you and trying to give you that, but instead of you all sitting here trying to listen, you all get up, you're trying to disrupt the session, and you want to attack me and stab me. How would I feel? Would I feel like coming here and speaking to you all? Would I feel like I would want to come here and spend this time? If I would get the slightest indication that you guys are just not interested, I'm telling you this because I feel, I'm trying to express my feelings in this regard. If I would be sitting up here and talking to you guys, thinking that you guys are thinking to yourself, what the heck is this guy talking about? You know, who allowed this guy to speak on the podium or on the minbar or the pulpit? If I get facial impressions that you guys don't like me to speak to you, it's going to start making me feel uncomfortable. Right. These are just a little thought or small thoughts for you to consider. Imagine Abu Abdullah al-Husayn salamullah alayh on the day of Ashura. In the morning after Salatul Fajr, he comes to speak to the people. Oh people, didn't you guys invite me? Didn't you write letters to me? I have the letters. Do you not know who I am? Do you not know that I am the grandson of the Holy Prophet? My father is Ali ibn Abi Talib. My mother is Fatima al-Zahra. While he's speaking to these people, they start making noise so that Abu Abdullah's voice is not heard. And they start throwing stones at Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. Okay. What's the feeling? None of us have felt anything like this. We would not put ourselves in that position. Abu Abdullah has come knowing he's going to be in that position. Okay. Dhuhr time, salat time, he says, let's pray. They say, your prayer is not accepted. They keep on attacking. Abu Abdullah is praying. They throw arrows. The man has to take him with his body. Abu Abdullah is watching his companions one by one being slaughtered. Abu Abdullah has to see his son Ali ibn al-Akbar going to the battlefield. And he has to go and visit that body after قَطَّعُوهُ عِرْبًا عِرْبًا. He has to see his Ali ibn al-Asghar the way he did. Alright? The pains of all of this, the stress of it would be too much to bear. Right? As I said, I'm very deficient in trying to get this. There's no way I can get this across. None of us is really going to feel what he went through. Okay, but the stress of it would cause him to be feeling very sad, upset. I'm trying to bring guidance to these people. This is how they're treating me? But you look at Abu Abdullah, you know, they say the closer it got to the day of Ashura, to the Dhuhr of Ashura, and gradually to the time of the Shahada of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn salamullah alayh, his face is glowing, brighter. He's not feeling down. Yes, it's terrible. But he's not losing the spirit. He's going out with strength. 60 years old. He's a 60-year-old man. that has seen all the atrocities before his own shahada, yet he goes to fight and people are not able to come forward and fight him. All alone, Abu Abdullah is standing and fighting. And they can only throw arrows from a distance or stones from a distance. This is how high the spirit of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn salamullah alayhi is on the day of Ashura. If I had seen the tiniest bit of that, I would have definitely not been able to carry on with my mission. Now, we don't go through this. We're talking about a spiritual lesson we want to take from this. We don't go through that level of severity. The circumstances that we deal with, no matter how difficult they are, and sometimes we make a big deal out of them. We're struggling financially. We're struggling because of an illness. Struggling because of a family problem. Struggling for people who are in, let's say, Bahrain. Struggling because the authorities are oppressing them. None of what we face is what Abu Abdullah al-Husayn salamullah alayhi faced. But we need to learn this lesson. What is it that keeps Abu Abdullah al-Husayn salamullah alayhi, not only that he doesn't feel down, but His face starts to glow more and more. He's more energetic. And he continues accomplishing his mission. What is it? What's the spirit? What is it that if we don't, or because we don't have it, when these difficulties come our way, we get depressed? We feel depression. We feel lost. We don't want to talk to anybody. We feel lost. Abu Abdullah, no matter what the difficulty was, it didn't. What is it? What it is that connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He sees this coming from Allah. This is the important bit about that connection with Allah. He sees this as something that is coming from Allah to benefit him. The last words of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn are this. They say they heard him. Ilahi ridhan biqadaik tasliman li'amrik la ma'buda siwak. Allahu Akbar. If we develop this spirit in us, not only in our personal lives, but in our social lives, no matter how difficult the circumstances are, as the companions of the Imam of our time, trying to be them, when we face difficulties, there's nothing that's going to cause us to stop. Because we see that this which is coming to us, the difficulties that are befalling us, or something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the authority of this universe, is bringing upon me, and he's not doing it, he doesn't do anything to harm me. God doesn't do that. If I develop that understanding, have those reminders, it gives us that strength. Nothing can stop us. Recite a salawat, please. What we talked about up to this point is that inshallah we want to be of those who are wanting to follow the lead of the Imam of our time. يَأْتَمُّ بِهِ وَهُوَ يَأْتَمُّ بِهِ قَبْلَ قِيَامِهِ, according to the Holy Prophet. We want to be of those. And we said that when we start on that path, we should know we're going to have enemies. This is the culture that Ziyarat Ashura, that we're supposed to be reciting on a daily basis, very beneficial. That is a spiritual and social political advice, to read that Ziyarah on a regular basis. on a daily basis, if not daily, at least weekly. It only takes 10 minutes. The culture that comes with that is the culture that reminds us there are going to be enemies, and therefore we are psychologically and intellectually ready for enemies. We're not caught by surprise. Then we said that the most devastating thing that the enemy does, what the enemy does that causes the failure of believers, is the trickery of the enemy. The enemies throughout history have caused the believers to give up through trickery. Otherwise, the believers never lose. We mentioned the verses in Surah Al-A'raf 20, 21, and 22, that God teaches us how our forefather, our mother and our father, Adam and Hawa, Adam and Eve, how they were tricked. And it caused them to leave the enjoyable life they had in the Garden of Eden, as they call it, the Jannah. Trickery. The shayateen, the enemies of Islam, the enemies of humanity, the enemies of the believers, trick the believers so that the believers give up. Otherwise, if the believers themselves don't give up, if the believers don't change course, if the believers continue on the path that they need to continue on, they will be unstoppable. We mentioned the example. There's plenty of examples. Shaitan came to the believers in the Battle of Badr. There are 313, over 1,000, some figures say 1,300 people, the enemies of Islam. You look at the numbers, you're thinking to yourself, how can these believers overcome their enemy? It's not wise. But at that time, God said, this is the right thing to do. You need to fulfill this. You need to continue with it. You need to go and fight. Shaitan came, creating fear in the believers. Some of the believers stood up and said, this is not the right time to do this, O Prophet. They outnumber us. We don't have the right weapons. We didn't even come out here. Go read the history of the Battle of Badr. The Holy Prophet hadn't come out of Medina to fight an army. He had come out for a different purpose. But now they're caught over here. They either stay or they go back to Medina. The true believers, like Miqdad of the Muhajireen, the true believers, like Sa'd ibn Mu'adh, they stood up and they said, O Prophet, we have pledged, your life is before ours. We will protect you. We follow your lead. We follow your command, whatever you say. And so if you see it appropriate, we will fight. They fought. They were victorious. The enemies tried to trick them. Shaitan tried to trick them in thinking that they're going to be losing. But the believers stood against that fear. And they were victorious. In the battle of Uhud, they didn't. One of the things that caused the failure of the believers in the battle of Uhud was this. They announced, the Prophet has been killed. Trickery. What did that cause? The believers stopped fighting. They started running. There's other things that happened as well. I'm sure you know the story. I'm not trying to give you a full picture of that. Glimpses of it. Trickery. They caused the believers to stop fighting. Otherwise, they would have been victorious. In the Battle of Siffin, similarly, they went in with 45,000 people. The enemy had 75,000. But they continued. They were about to be victorious. What caused the failure of the believers? Trickery caused the believers to stop fighting. Malik al-Ashtar said, tell Amir al-Mu'mineen a few more strikes, I will kill Muawiyah himself. The messenger said, look, if you go back, if you don't come back right now, you may not see Ali alive. They're going to kill Ali. Instead of killing the enemy, turning against Amir al-Mu'min. Trickery causes the believers to stop. We talked about how Shaytan, in that story, the verses that we quoted, how he makes what's right seem wrong and what's wrong seem right. This is what the shaitan does. Something that is wrong, he'll make it seem as though it's right. It's the right thing to do. And something that is wrong, he'll make it seem like it's the right thing to do. This is what shaitan does. This is what shayateen of humanity do. We mentioned some examples with regards to God's law, how that's happening today. I won't mention the examples again tonight, but I would really want the believers to go and study some of these examples. A lot of us, a lot of the believers are affected by this poisonous propaganda against Islamic teachings. A lot of the believers are, unfortunately, a lot of us don't even realize we have been affected by this propaganda, and we have negative feelings towards the actual teachings of Islam. We have been convinced what is right, which is God's teaching, is wrong, and what others teach, which is wrong, we've been convinced that that is the right thing. This is what shaitan does. After talking about some of the laws, we got into some of the more social examples. And there's a reason for that, because the context in which we are discussing this matter of trickery is that we want to be followers of the Imam of our time, which we said he's trying to establish an authority that is just over the globe, throughout the globe, the government of Islam that is going to make sure justice is brought to all people and no one is treated unjustly. When we want to move in that direction, enemies are going to come in our way and prevent us. And we said that they're going to use this trickery to stop us. So the trickery we're talking about is, well, more so to do with the social political atmosphere instead of the laws, although that's also important. In another discussion, another session, another series, maybe we can discuss those matters. In that context, we mentioned the example of the Battle of Siffin and other examples that can be mentioned. There's plenty of examples that can be mentioned. Some of them are very sad. I wish I had time to explain to you what happened during the time of Imam al-Sadiq, salamullah alayh, how the movement of the Ahlul Bayt was hijacked by trickery or through trickery. The believers were tricked. There's plenty of them. What we want to discuss is some of the techniques that are used to cause this trickery. Or let me say, the main technique in a sense, or the main thing that is done that causes the believers to be tricked. What is it? How is it that Shaytan, for instance, in the story that we mentioned with Adam and Eve, Adam and Hawa, how was he able to trick them? If we learn how he tricks, if we learn how Shayateen trick, we're going to be saved of falling into the trap of the Shaytan, whether it's Iblis or the humans that are being the Shaytan, preventing the establishment of the government of the Imam of our time. The most important thing that is done in that story by Shaytan and today by Shayateen is that they build trust with people. They cause people to trust them in the lies they give. Right? The wrong they say is a lie. Shaitan said, God is telling you not to have this. Why? Because he doesn't want you to be here for eternity. You want to be here for eternity. It's a good thing. God doesn't want you to be here for eternity. That's why he told you to do that. It's a lie. How did he cause Adam and Hawa to believe this lie? He built trust. He caused them to accept it. Building trust. How did he build trust in that story? If you remember, I read verse number 21 of Surah Al-A'raf. It says, وَقَاسَمَهُمَا أَنِّي لَكُمَا لَمِنَ النَّاصِحِينَ. He swore to God, أَنِّي لَكُمَا لَمِنَ النَّاصِحِينَ. There are many emphases put there. He swore to God, one. Then he said, inni. This is a form of emphasis in the Arabic language. Lamina nasahin. Another emphasis. When he swore to God, and he put all that emphasis, that I'm only trying to do you good, he built this false trust, so that Adam trusted his word, accepted it, he believed it. God had said otherwise. He was the one you should have trusted. But no, Shaitan builds false trust. He wants to give you a lie, but he's going to build trust. How does he do that? How do Shayateen build this trust? They use various techniques. One of them is emotion. Through emotions. We talked about the importance of emotions on a previous night when we were talking about la'an, and how in the la'an, when we are told to do la'an so many times in ziyarat Ashura, in other du'as, in other supplications, in other ziyarat, all that la'an is to tell us there's an enemy, constantly remind us, and to build emotions against that enemy. Let me, as a side point, mention this, that the enemies of Islam, or anyone, it's the enemies of Islam today that are doing this, but the concept of creating hatred against an enemy is pretty common in all civilizations. In the Western civilization also, when or where we hear this idea that, you know, you don't like, it is said it's wrong to preach hatred. You have some individuals that preach hatred, and they say this is wrong. All right? Which preaching hatred against innocent people, against people that are not doing anything wrong, or what they're doing is out of ignorance. Preaching hatred against someone that doesn't believe in the exact same faith that you believe in, or the same sect that you believe in, or has the same political view that you have. Preaching hatred against them just because of that is not acceptable. Okay. But it's interesting that the West does it itself or themselves. They just don't call it preaching hatred. They do that against the enemies that they create. Once upon a time during the Cold War, the enemy they had was the USSR. There were plenty of movies and TV shows that were made in order to create hatred against the Soviets. There was hatred that fueled feelings in people against the Soviets. So when people would crack down, the police, the FBI would crack down on activists that seemed to be, even in America, supporting the Soviet ideology, the crackdown was very harsh. Nobody questioned it. Why? Because they had created very negative feelings against these people. Emotions were used. at that time against the Soviets. Wars that they had, the Cold War, there were a lot of killings going on. They've made movies about that as well. Whether it was in Latin America that they were fighting the Soviets or elsewhere in the world, people were being killed. But those casualties were not important. Why? Because they were considered the enemy. Emotions against them. That's the right thing to do. These are the enemies. We hate them. And you do that. They didn't use maybe the word hate, but they created those feelings. Now actually, they're doing that against Islam and Muslims. And then they say, you guys don't preach hatred. But there's hatred that's being preached against us. So when people are killed, people are bombed, when they attacked Afghanistan, they didn't really feel for the people that were being killed. Why? Because their emotions were used and they were provoked against these people. They were treated as enemy and negative feelings were created against them. Yeah, this is the right thing to do. Fox News is really good at doing that. Building up emotions against a people. One of the techniques that is used to gain trust is emotions. We talked about how important emotions were at that time, and we still insist that they're very important. But you know what it is? Emotions are supposed to be directed with intellect. Okay, our thoughts, our intellectual understanding is supposed to guide our emotions. Not that emotions guide our intellect. It doesn't work the other way around. We have emotions, we have an intellect, we have both. Which one leads us? The intellect does. But emotions motivate us. But if we're motivated and that motivation pulls us in a direction and tells our intellect this is the right direction to move towards, well, that becomes very dangerous. The example of the Battle of Siffin, I think, is the best example for this. When they put up the Qur'ans on the spears, that created this emotional feeling, oh my God, you know, this is the Qur'an, it's sacred. They're right, we shouldn't do this. It's the same people. When they put up the Qur'an, Muawiyah and Amr ibn As, they were clever. They were shayateen. They knew what they were doing. They used the emotions of the believers to make them question what their intellect had told them is the right thing to do. Is it the right thing or not? They created confusion with that. Emotions. When Muawiyah wanted to rally people against Amirul Mu'mineen, what did he use? Everybody has heard. They said that they got, whether it was really the shirt, the qamis, the thawb of Uthman or not is a different thing. They made it sound or seem like it was. They got it with loads of blood on it. And they took it around. They said, oh, Uthman has been killed. We're going to revenge his blood. People's emotions are rallied up. Then you say, oh, go this direction. They will. The intellect is no longer working, right? Another example that's a contemporary example, and the enemies of Islam use this. For the Shias, they use them. They use your love for the Ahlul Bayt to convince you something that is right to be wrong. You all love the Ahlul Bayt. All Shias do. They're willing to give their lives for the Ahlul Bayt. But be careful. Be very careful. Because that love can be used against the right path. When they rally up your support, the love of the Ahlul Bayt, the love of Amirul Mu'mineen, the love of the lady Fatima al-Zahra, Salamullah alayha. And remind you of what others did to them, then they get you to support what? They get you to support division and being divisive against other Muslimin. They create satellite channels. And they use the love that you have for the Ahlul Bayt to say we need to curse these individuals by name, on satellite. Create things about them. Write things, say things about these individuals in history. Sometimes very nasty things. Not for any good, but to cause division. Something Amir al-Mu'mineen said, I will allow them to burn the door of my house. And they can disrespect me and my wife, the daughter of the Holy Prophet, but I will not take to my sword because I do not want the Ummah of the Holy Prophet to be divided and fighting each other. They use the love of the Ahlul Bayt to create division amongst the followers of the Holy Prophet and the followers of the Ahlul Bayt. Because when the followers of the Ahlul Bayt say, look, this is wrong, they use the love of the Ahlul Bayt to say, this guy is fasiq. They use the love of the Ahlul Bayt to say, this guy is, God forbid, God forbid, God forbid, I've heard these things. They say that this person is waladu zina. A bastard. Because he's saying, you shouldn't say these things. Emotions, you got to think, your intellect. What happened to the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen? Emotions are rallied up. Love of the Ahlul Bayt, hatred towards the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt, those emotions need to be there. But be careful, those same emotions can be rallied up to get you to go against the very word of Amir al-Mu'mineen. That's one technique. Another technique that is used, brothers and sisters, is mixing lies and truths together. This is something that's found in the Holy Quran. This is something that Amir al-Mu'mineen tells us. We have a hadith on. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, look, if everybody was saying the truth, you wouldn't have division. There are some people that are not saying what's right. But they don't say it just out like that. They say, walakin, he says, walakin yu'khadh min hadha dhighth, wa min hadha dhighth fayumzajan. They take a bit of truth, a bit of falsehood, they mix them up, they present it to you, and you think it's true. There's a story that our imams tell us about Jesus. They say one day Iblis went to Jesus, ala nabiyyina wa alayhi wa alayhi salam, and told him, I have 5 pieces of advice for you. Jesus said, okay, go ahead. Said he gave me the first advice. It was a very good advice. Second advice, it was also very good. Third advice, also very good. Fourth advice, also very good. He wanted to mention the fifth one. Jesus told him, stop. Why? He said, you gave me 4 good pieces of advice to gain my trust, to give me that poisonous one at the end. Okay. 4 truths for 1 lie. People that are best at this, this is how they do it. They won't give you 4 lies and 1 truth. They'll gain your trust with 4 truths. But on the 5th one, they'll lie to you. And you've gained this trust towards them. You'll accept it. They've told me to finish at 9:30. It's almost 9:30. I'm going to have to continue this again, I guess, tomorrow night, inshallah. But this is very important, brothers and sisters. Don't believe me. Believe me. I really am not trying to waste your time on these issues. I realize that the reason why the Imam of our time is not amongst us is because if he were to come, the same techniques that were used during the time of Amirul Mu'mineen are going to be used against the believers. The believers, again, are going to fail. And what's going to happen is that the Imam of our time would be assassinated and killed. That's why he's not here. Because this happened too many times. Believers need to learn. Otherwise, if we ask our Imam to come like the naive people who pledged allegiance with Amirul Mu'mineen after the assassination of Uthman, they knew he's the best person to lead, but they were naive. He said, I am the best person, but you guys, are you sure you want my leadership? They didn't. They weren't able to. Why? They didn't have this capacity. They were tricked. Too many times. Too many times. In all three battles. And the person who assassinated Amir al-Mu'mineen was tricked. He was on his side. He was on Amir al-Mu'mineen's side. The reason why the Imam of our time is not coming is because the believers have not gained the maturity that they need. We have not gained that maturity globally. Sometimes people ask this. They say, oh, don't we have 313 ulama that are pious in Qom? If we don't have 313 out of 50,000 ulama in Qom, then we're in pretty deep trouble. The issue isn't 313 good ulama or pious people only, brothers and sisters. We need to have the masses of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt mature mentally and spiritually, socially and politically, so that they can follow the Imam of our time. It's not about having 313. How can you manage a global revolution with just 313 commanders and no followers? No. Amir al-Mu'mineen had Malik. He had others. The problem wasn't he didn't have these. The masses were ignorant. The masses fell for the tricks. We as Shia have got to develop ourselves, inshallah. Assalamu alaykum, ya Aba Abdullah. Assalamu alaykum, ya أبا عبد الله السلام عليك يا مظلوم السلام عليك أيها الشهيد بكربلا عطشانا May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you. My beloved Imam al-Husayn, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you. My beloved oppressed Imam, the Imam that was slaughtered by the shores of the Euphrates, while his mouth was dry of thirst. Sallallahu alayhi. Let's go to the tent of Abu Abdullah. Tonight we want to remember the orphan nephew of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, the son of Imam al-Mujtaba, who proudly came to Karbala to support his uncle, the Imam of his time, to show the people of Kufa that his father, Imam al-Mujtaba, was not a coward. You know, the story of Imam al-Mujtaba is very sad. They made it seem like Imam al-Mujtaba was a coward. Qasim is coming to Karbala to say, I am the son of Hassan. Let's go to the tent of Abu Abdullah on the night of Ashura. If we could, if you could imagine the tent, the Imam put out all the lights. Tomorrow they only want me. Take the hand of my family members, each of you, and go. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas stood and said, where can we go without you? Zuhair ibn Qin said, if we are killed and our bodies are burnt to ashes and our ashes thrown into the air and we are resurrected and this happens 70 times, we will not leave you, Ya Abu Abdullah. Imam al-Husayn told them, I have not seen companions as loyal as you. Qasim is watching this. Imam al-Husayn tells them, tomorrow what's awaiting you is shahada, martyrdom, swords are awaiting you. But know that my grandfather, the Holy Prophet, is awaiting you. You'll be having positions by the Holy Prophet in the hereafter. Qasim is watching this. He says, Ya Ammah, will I be of those that you described? Just imagine how Imam al-Husayn feels when his nephew is asking this question. But the Imam responds and says, Qasim, how do you view death? He said, Ahla min al-asal. If this is the death for your cause, for the cause of Allah, it is sweeter than honey. Imam al-Husayn told him that you will join us tomorrow, you will be one of the shuhada. Although Abu Abdullah told him this night of Ashura, when the time came on the day of Ashura, Qasim came over to ask permission from his uncle Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. How is Husayn going to feel? Maybe the Imam thought to himself, Qasim, how can I allow you to go? My brother Hassan entrusted me with you. How can I allow you to go to the battlefield? The armor is even too big for your size. How can I allow you to go and fight these ruthless men? But Qasim insisted, said, I will have to go, uncle. Qasim went to the battlefield. Imagine the son of Hassan fighting the enemies. The size he had when he went to the battlefield. The enemies have said, we saw a child coming towards us, but this child is a lion. He fights the enemies. One of the enemy members says to his companions, I'm going to make sure his uncle feels the pain of seeing his nephew slaughtered. His companions tell him, there's no need for you to move forward. There's plenty of people already there. But he says, no, I want to be the one who does this. They attacked Qasim. According to some accounts, what happened in that scene is that the horse of Qasim was striked. Imagine this young boy on the horse fighting with the enemies. The horse suddenly takes him in the midst of the enemies where they're surrounding him. I don't know how they striked him. How many swords strike the body of Hassan? How many spears? How many arrows? All I know, the call was heard, Ya Ghammam. Says Imam al-Hussein ran to see Qasim. He grabbed him. Bunayya, my child, it's difficult that you call on your uncle and he cannot help you. It says Qasim, because of the pain he was having, he was moving his legs out of pain. Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimin. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون.